Sir Mix-a-Lot, welcome.
What is up, man?
All right, you are in town for tonight. You are at the Ridgely Theater, my old stomping grounds in Funky Town. And then tomorrow at Lava Cantina, you're doing double duty with us.
Yeah, Lava Cantina is just like sexy.
Yeah, what a name, right?
I played that. We played that like 2 years ago. And I do arenas and stuff, which bore the hell out of me. I like up close and personal.
Yeah.
Lava Cantina is up close and personal, but fly as hell.
It's really cool. It's right in the middle. I mean, it's right there by the Nebraska Furniture Mart, which is just the funniest juxtaposition, you know?
And some water.
Yeah, and some water.
Yeah. I love it. Ferraris outside stuff.
Yeah, there's some money over there, too. So
good food, too.
Good food. It's all there. So you're selling. You're plugging. You know your stuff.
Yeah, I remember places I like. That's why I come back.
Now, forgive me, but what is the best way to address you nowadays? Mix or Mix-a-Lot? Do I need to get the whole thing in?
My guys hate syllables. They just say Mix.
Mix. All right, cool. Yeah. That's good with me. That's good with me. Okay, so you're here for two nights, Fort Worth, then Lava Cantina on the other side tomorrow. What is the road like for you today?
You know, it's kind of weird because people think when you get older, you get more bored with it. When I was doing it for the money, you know, young artists, you're hungry. Everybody says that's when it's fun. No, that's not fun because you're grinding. You're doing shows in New York in February, and it's like 10 people in a room upstairs. It's, you know, that kind of stuff. You got to walk up to your show. That was cool, but now it's more fun because you do it purely for the art. You know, you're not chasing dollars all over the place.
Yeah, and I would imagine you're as much of a professional at it as you've ever been because you've had way more than your 10,000 hours at this, you know, point in time, right?
Well, you know, what's funny is sometimes we'll do shows like mixed with new artists and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it's funny. You always know the new artists when they do the sound check where they're, you know, strong cocking around the stage. Like, watch me. I'm going to show mix up. Fucking this horse like a baller. Blacktop slaughter. Making these 18 taller. I'm like, what are you doing, dude? A sound check.
You're wasting it.
Yeah, just go like this.
Who are you trying to impress?
Exactly. But no, I mean, the professionalism is something I pride myself on.
Yeah.
Because I realize I watch so many acts lose tours because of their lack of it. So we show up. We don't cry about needing tequila flown in from Brazil somewhere. We don't do any of that stuff. We show up. We do the show. Get a clean hotel. That's all we ask for. A clean hotel. Make sure we got our money. And we deliver. And what happens is promoters start to tell others. Agencies start to tell others. And we get more and more shows.
See, I would think more artists would put more value on the clean hotel request because with all the crazy things that have been in writers, like you could have the 200 special colored M&Ms, but you could still get stiff with a nasty hotel.
Let me tell you something. I ain't anal about nothing until it comes to hotels. I'm serious, man. I'm really, if I walk on sticky carpet, it's nasty.
Ugh.
You know, so what we do is I don't really like 5 stars either. Because, you know, to get a hamburger is like $45 and you got to walk down, you got to get dressed.
Right.
To go downstairs and get a ham sandwich. So I'm like, nah, I'm good. So I'm kind of, give me something clean, straight up, that they clean often, like suites.
Yeah.
Rumors to you rich artists out there, listen to me. Don't stay in suites because the top cover is dusty.
This is great information. I'm gonna keep this log for when I make my millions, okay?
Dude, you're already making millions. Look at this around. Look at this.
Hey, man.
Look at the jewelry this guy has on. Look at this ring. Look at this. It's the size of a brick.
I can't complain. And I can attest to the professionalism. You were here like 15 minutes early. It was great.
Yeah, I was on the phone, like bugging everybody trying to get in here.
Nice.
But I'm driving I got all my guys sleep, right? They were up blazing last night. I'm the only one. I don't smoke cigarettes, don't smoke weed. So I'm the designated driver.
Yeah.
My voice is kind of going out. That's bad. I got a show tonight. That's all right. I don't lip sync. I'm still going to do it.
I won't agitate you. We'll keep it cool.
I'm good.
How many you travel with?
4 of us.
4 of you?
Yep. Total. I don't need a road manager. None of that stuff. We don't need that. We just walk in. Done.
Now, do you have assignments for everybody? You more just like, I like to have the action around me.
Yeah. My nephew comes out because he's like a tech geek like me. So he sets up all the gear and stuff. After that, our sound check is, sound guys love us because we come in, we know what they're looking for, right?
Yeah.
Boom, boom, boom. Can you roll off 4K a little bit? Blah, blah, blah. Done. See you tonight. And they're like, that's it? And they're happy. You know, some guys go through 10 songs. I don't understand that, but I'm easy, man. 4 of us and all of us do something. I don't have guys standing around on stage with their arms folded looking like they're about to, you know, knock somebody's ass out. Come on, that's so 1985.
the appearances aren't so much to you these days.
No, if you ain't doing nothing, if you can't grab a mic and spit,
yeah,
or keep the gear running or do something, you got no place in my group.
Well, if you're about your money, I would imagine you would want to get efficient at some point.
Got to be efficient. I used to have like 12, 13 people in my group. I used to ride around with two buses. And,
oh, wow.
Yeah. And I'd do like $20,000 shows and I would net $1,500. Nah, that's not cool. We gotta kill that.
Well, it is a cool time right now because the touring marketplace is in a boom.
Yeah.
It's never really been like this. Promoters are throwing around stupid money, and heritage artists are on the road more than ever. We, of course, know
Heritage. I like that.
Well, you know, heritage. I mean, how else am I going to address Fleetwood Mac? I mean, I could be or the Rolling Stones. I could say it a little more derogatory, but you know, respect. You're even below that. Okay, you're good. You're good.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what, if I can be playing at 70 like Mick, I'm good.
Why not?
I'll take that.
If you could be finding a young lady to carry your seed, you know, why not?
Exactly. It'd be a great dad.
So you hail from Washington State, Seattle area. First of all, how's it going down there right now with everything going on?
Rough. I mean, it's getting crazy. And Seattle's kind of an entertainment town.
Yeah.
So for them to have to start canceling shows is really hard. But they got my manager sits on the Arts Commission. And they're talking about doing a lot of things up there. But I got to clean this up. I think when the test kits come out, it's kind of weird. I feel weird saying this, but we're going to find a whole lot more cases, but we're also going to find that the fatality rate is a lot lower than we think. But if we don't get a lot of tests out there, because the only people we're testing are people saying, I think I got it. Well, of course, the ratio is going to be a little higher, but they'll start testing more people. I think it'll make us feel a little bit better. But
do you think it affected the primary last night at all? Just people showing up, people...
No, because in Washington was mail-in. So
I
mailed mine in before I even left town.
Well, you kind of have to. You don't know if you're necessarily definitely going to be there on the day, I would imagine.
I don't even know if I'm finishing this tour. I mean, I'm serious. Well, they may start canceling stuff, which is fine. I mean, I think some of them, actually, I've been complaining that some of them should.
Yeah.
Especially in some of the areas like Florida we're going to. I'm like, ooh. You know, I mean, not that they have an outbreak, but if they do there.
Right.
Because most people are elderly in some of those areas.
Well, yeah, and just to speak for Washington's sake, when you're you know bordering water, when you're near ports, when you're big travel destination in and out, they canceled South by Southwest last week. That was here in Texas.
I'm glad they did. See, because everybody was going, well, we don't have cases here. You will.
Yeah.
If you do South by Southwest, people are coming from everywhere, including China.
Well, and it's got the dormant period before you're even infectious, I guess. You wouldn't even know you had it.
My voice went out. I called my doctor immediately. I'm like, oh, man, I might have it. I might have it. So I had some kind of something going on. I went in, and she gave me an antibiotic. 2 days later, I was fine. And I said, but I think I had it. She's like, did the antibiotic work? I said, yeah. She's like, you ain't got it. Because you'd be messed up. No, I'm anal about clean wipes now and washing my hands. And yeah, I'm funny about that stuff.
Well, man, I don't want to be a Debbie Downer with it because I've been the same way all these past 2 weeks, just everything. But then I heard this expert yesterday say, you know, it's good to do that, but it's going to come through breathing anyways. He's modeling Purell over here. So at the end of the day, you know, until someone tells me in really high authority that I can't go around with the rest of my life, then, you know, I think I got to keep walking around doing my job and trying to do the things I normally do.
Yeah, do your thing. Just be, you know, I want to say the brand. I was in a restaurant in Amarillo yesterday.
Oh.
And I was getting ready to eat. And this lady's about, I don't know, 10 feet away. And just this cough that sounded like she was coughing through pudding.
Oh, no.
I'm like, oh. And then, so I asked for some ketchup. And my waitress goes and grabs the ketchup off of her table.
No.
As soon as she sat it down, I'm like, no, I'm good. I lost my appetite. And she asked why, and I told her. She didn't know the lady was coughing. So she then holds her hand straight and walks right to the bathroom. I'm like, good, wash that off.
Isn't that funny when you ask a server for like extra fork or something or ketchup and they just grab it from the table? You're like, I could have done that.
Yeah, exactly. I could have stole one.
You want me to bust it too when I'm done?
Exactly.
I am fascinated though about you coming up in Seattle at the time that you came up in because there are these you know, different sounds coming and so iconic now. You coming up the same time that the rock thing is brewing up. Take me back to what that was like.
It was, you know, kind of weird because when I started trying to do rap, there was a rap group there. I always give them props, called the Emerald Street Boys, right? And they were way ahead of their time. I mean, I was like standing on stage, frozen, didn't know how to move, just rapped. These guys had, they played off each other's cadence. They knew when to walk forward, when to step back. They had a fly-ass DJ. They had everything, you know, and I'm just one dude starting a drum machine and rapping, and I realized, ooh, I got a long way to go. So props to them. But I was actually before the rock thing started. So I remember doing a show at a place on the Rainbow Tavern. I opened for this little group called Nirvana.
Wow.
You know, that's the kind of stuff I saw back then. Those guys were all over town just scratching just like everybody else. Second Avenue was where everybody, all the bands rehearsed. And so you got to see this thing start. And I remember not seeing Pearl Jam or Nirvana or the Presidents again until we were all at the Grammys.
Wow.
That was crazy.
What a moment.
And we're all sitting here at the Grammys outside, still looking Seattle. Nobody dressed up for the Grammys, right? Yeah, it was an interesting time. Seattle's always been a music town, but a lot of people don't realize, you know, the George Bensons and Ray Charles and people like that. Obviously Jimi Hendrix, but a lot of people didn't know that we were that musical until now.
Did you have a lot of those mixed bills like you were talking about, where you might have a hip hop and a rock on the same show?
That didn't go on. Once Sub Pop blew those acts up, they were smart enough to know, yeah, playing with Mix-a-Lot is not a good look. You know, I mean, they really etched out a kind of a new genre almost.
Absolutely.
I mean, grunge was a real kind of a strange thing. I don't like when they stopped calling themselves grunge.
Yeah.
When they did that,
yeah,
the bomb drop.
Yeah.
Gone, you know. Except for Pearl Jam. They didn't do that.
Well, and that core four, I think you would say, from the Seattle area, each of them had their distinct kind of sound within a sound. Looking back, right, you know, we're still talking about those four bands as opposed to so many of the other little, you know, mini grunge bands that popped up on post grunge, if you will.
Yeah.
I think it's a very cool thing when you just think about the type of historic artists that brewed between, I don't know if you'd say between 85 and 95, even in Seattle.
Even the way it was mixed, the way Sub Pop mixed records, they intentionally made it sound unpolished.
Yeah.
Which is what made it grunge. It made it dirty, kind of nasty sounding, imperfect, which is what made it perfect.
I remember seeing an interview with Butch Vig, who produced Nevermind, and he said he had to try so hard to convince Kurt to double his vocals because they were so against polishing up like that.
Exactly.
And he said the thing that finally convinced him was he told them that Lennon used to double his vocals.
Yeah.
And his mind was blown.
Yeah, and those guys, I mean, it's funny. If you come up to the Hendrix Museum, you see a big Nirvana exhibit, and you can see it was just old school. Ink pen, pad of paper, you know, a bag of chips. It was just straight up old school stuff, and I love it. And with hip-hop, it was a little, in that era, we were trying to be glossy, so we were faking it.
Right.
Like we had more than we had. And then all of a sudden the 90s came. It's like, oh, wait, got to bring that down a level. You know what I mean? Because NWA, Public Enemy. I mean, the heyday of rap for me was eye-opening. You know, to go on tour and meet cats like Rakim and Public Enemy. I'm like, ooh, I got to go home and get back to work.
Yeah.
I was going the wrong direction. I was trying to look like Parliament Funkadelic.
Well, lyrically, there was something very special in that, you know, early 90s, late 80s, early 90s thing that I think once you get back to the mid to late 90s, the, you know, the floss and everything started coming back pretty heavily in the videos.
The thing about rap, in my opinion, and I don't think nobody really talks about it because they don't want to piss off radio, but radio kind of started to embrace rap when they were doing the TV melodies and you know, they were playing it. But then when rappers wanted to say something, radio said no, and that's when rap got better, because that's when NWA, Public Enemy, Rakim, they didn't care. Okay, well, we're not gonna get played, and let's really go hard. And that's when it just blew up. I don't know how, because there was no internet, they weren't getting radio play, but it was like rumor mill. I don't know what it was, but to go, I went on a tour that I should not have been on. I ain't gonna lie to you. I'll give you the names and you'll be like, yeah, you shouldn't have been. It was Ice-T, NWA, Public Enemy, Stetsasonic, Big Daddy Kane, and What's My Black Ass Doing There?
Well, you know, it's a lot of names.
Yeah, it's a lot of names. I'm like, okay. But it was a learning experience, especially Chuck D. That dude is brilliant, man. And he caught me. He doesn't even remember it. Every time I tell him, he's like, I don't remember that. But I was doing an interview, and I was acting like I was somebody I wasn't.
Mm.
And he said, dude, you're pretty intelligent. You know a lot of stuff. You know, he didn't use that word. Why are you talking ignorant intentionally? Why are you dumbing yourself down? And I was like, I feel like my mom just scolded me. I'm like, oh, okay, I'll stop doing that. But me and Chuck is cool. That dude is so humble, man, so down to earth, never changed. You know, got in the game a grown man.
Yeah.
Which is odd.
And probably a blessing, too.
Yep. And we come from the same kind of genius, Rick Rubin.
Yeah.
Rick is what he taught me. And in the first record I did with him, I would have never done on my own. Because he same thing, he stripped my record down. He said, dude, all the slick programming and super fast scratching. He said, but you're not giving me a song. You're giving me skills. You're like a constant guitar solo. I'm like, damn. He would tear your whole album down, then he'd put it back together.
I don't think you can cite a more prolific producer ever,
it's
really.
It's all in the brain. It's all in his mind. He doesn't walk up to the board and start grabbing faders. He just sits back, pulls on his beard, crosses his feet, and goes, add more of that. Take that away. That's it. And you do it, and the song starts to breathe, starts to... You know, that song has to be a living organism, and he makes it that.
It's fascinating to watch the documentary Funky Monks that was basically watching him working with the Chili Peppers for the first time on Blood Sugar Sex Magic.
That's when I met him.
Was that the time?
Yeah.
In LA?
Yeah, I remember the, when I first heard, when I think they had done, I think it was Give It Away, and I heard that song. I was like, whoo, that's a hit. And if I remember correctly, they put that out and it didn't work.
Oh, really?
And then they did the Under the Ridge thing and that blew up and then they brought it back out. Because I thought, as soon as I heard that song, Rick's like, you like that? I'm like, that's fly. I mean, that bass line. So Flea, this is all Rick Rubin. I wanted Flea to play on something. I didn't care what it was. So I did a remix of this song called Sleeping With My Funk. Flea's sitting there talking to Rick and he said, I'll do it. Didn't pay Flea anything. He just played bass on it because I always thought he was like the coolest bass player because he would perform while he plays. But yeah, Rick is a god to me, man. That dude is incredible.
Well, exactly what you were talking about in that documentary on Give It Away. It shows Flea, who might be the greatest recording bass player to ever live, is doing all these crazy scales on the song and everything like that. And it shows Ruben going, no.
Yep.
Boom. Boom. Leave the air in there.
That boom, 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 that little vibrato, boom. I was like, oh my goodness. And I was like, dude, gotta be black. You know, I looked through the window, I'm like, oh, damn, he's white as a sheet of paper, but he could play. Yeah, that was, and just to watch, like, he produces by telling you take stuff out, which is odd. Usually they're adding, bring in the orchestra.
Sure.
You know, it was just the opposite of Motown, which I never was a Motown fan. I liked the Motown music, but I always thought, no, don't get me started with that. Get some people mad. I'm in Dallas.
You'll be all right. So musically, what's on deck right now for Sir Mix-a-Lot?
I got a young kid right now I'm working with. He goes by the name TNT, right? Dude was like, typical rapper, angry. The world owes him something. And then he just called me one day. He said, man, I'm tired of being like this. I just want to do a record. And dude can spit. And he's one of the guys, finally, that I work with that didn't try to be me.
Mm.
I'm like, dude, sounding like me is going to make you kind of 90s. I'm not looking to sell that right now. I mean, dude got skills. And he was shocked that, especially when I produce trap stuff, he was like, you produced this? I'm like, yeah. I listen to new stuff, bro. And I love challenging myself. Producing is what I love. That's why I Sir Mix-a-Lot, not Sir Rap-a-Lot. But a lot of people don't realize that every song I've ever done, except for about three or four, I produced. You know, start to finish. Mixed them, everything. Produce, arrange, mix. I master now. I didn't do it in the 90s because you needed special equipment.
Sure.
You know, but now, master right in your house.
Game's changed.
If you got an ear and the right monitors, in the right room. That's one thing I had to get my room acoustics straight. My acoustics game was bad. I was mixing records and going in the car. I'm like, man, this is all out of phase. Could have swore that vocal was on the left. Now it's on the right, you know.
You do a car test, right?
Yeah, got to do the car test. Yeah, reference, baby.
I always do that when, you know, here we have record labels coming in to play us new music 3 out of 5 days a week, sometimes 4. And I ask them if they will to put their projects on a CD for me. Now, they have to find one first, but
Nowadays,
to put one on a CD for me because I want to go, you know, we listen to these songs in my boss's office with these giant, just the best sound system you've ever heard in your life. That's not how the general public out in DFW is going to hear the song first.
Right.
I want to go hear it in the car because that's how it's going to be served to them.
Hey, man, I say this way. Every time I go to NAMM, there are particular engineers there, the big fancy cats. I'm not going to say names, Tony. But anyway, they mix and they have these absolute perfect environments, right? That's cool because you got to see what's going on in your mix. You got to kind of glue it together. But that's their reference point. So when I'm listening to earbuds or headphones or in my car, I can't hear all that information. And I keep telling people, man, if you don't replicate the end user's environment, your record's going to suck. You know, something I learned just listening to Dre. That's how Dre was. He'd go right to the car. All rappers go to the car immediately. Give me a regular system, then give me one with some subs in the back. You know, all kind of stuff. Play it in a club, whatever.
Elaborate on what NAMM is if people don't know what you're mentioning.
NAMM, what
there.
Is it? Something. Anyway, it's a giant kind of musical instrument, kind of musical manufacturers, guys that manufacture instruments and all that. They do it every year in L.A. It's right after CES. That's why I know I usually leave CES. I go right over to L.A. And NAMM, if you are a struggling band, if you are a struggling musician, you want to see what's new, how can I make records cheaper, that's the place to go. Because everybody is, and they do this, they did this one year, they did a blind mixing contest where they had 3 well-known engineers take the same song and mix it versus 3 or 4 kids. Kids won.
Wow.
I mean, like the top 3. Why? Because those old engineers were stuck back there.
Mm.
They were stuck. And I can say this because I'm an old cat, but I'm not mixing records trying to sound like 19. I hate when somebody goes, you have to meet John. He mixed Peter Frampton in 78. So what? Nobody's listening. Nobody wants that sound right now. Oh, man. But I get that a lot. He was like, man, they want me to be the grumpy old guy with him. I'm like, no, actually, I like Thunder's 808s. I like distortion on my 808. I like my back window shaking. Sorry.
So when you're working with young guys now, working with young hip-hop artists and grooming them, if you will, do you ever take that conversation to help them from whatever is in the studio, you're obviously a genius, to the stage at all? Is that part of the deal?
I do. I do that a lot because I realize if you're just a soldier and you look like everybody else, you probably won't get very far. It's always, you know, there's something about Kendrick Lamar that stood apart from other people. There's something, you know, my buddy Macklemore stood apart from what Mix-a-Lot did. So he had his own thing. And sometimes you get artists and you can hear them doing it because they think that's what's happening. But if that's what's happening, that's not going to be what's there when you get there. And so, I give you an example. There was some, Macklemore has a little school he does, and he takes young artists and he grooms them and stuff like that. And I realized he was busy as hell, and I'm watching a couple of them, and they were good. It was a male-female little rap team. They were tight, right? But when they were sound checking, I noticed they were looking at the ground. Something new rappers do a lot. They look down, and they rap over their own lyrics, which I can't stand, and that's the norm now. But the problem is that's not performing. So if you mess up, so what? Embrace it. You know, but lip syncing, I don't know, we got to have a name for rapping over your own lyrics. I saw, I ain't gonna say the name, big rappers doing that on Saturday Night Live. They should be strung up and beaten, in my opinion. But that being said, I told them, I said, you know, when you guys perform, why are you looking at the floor? And he said, well, I'm trying to remember my lyrics. And if I look at somebody in the crowd and they say the wrong word, I say the wrong, which I go through too. I said, when you look, don't see them. Just look. Don't care, because light's going to be on you. And he did it, and it actually looked a lot better. And he saw the video of himself, And he's like, I just looked into the light. Little stuff like that separates some sad F from an actual performer.
I feel like the world doesn't want to hear me because I've been singing the same tune that you have for a long time about not lip sync, but, you know, play to track is like, it's not even a thing. Like, people just do it, you know, yeah. And it's kind of almost like understood that you're going to do it. Also, I won't name who yes. It was. I saw a massive female R&B act at the American Airlines Center, 20,000 people, everything. And one of my favorite things in the world is to see live a great yes. R&B show. Yeah. We have so many different instruments on one stage. It's tight.
Harmonies. Yeah.
Exactly. Performance. Yeah. And it was all there, dancers, everything. And it was played to track the whole time. I couldn't believe how many people were being yeah. paid to be on stage to have a track playing behind
and
it the whole
hip-hop,
time.
Hip-hop, you have a DJ. So you already got, they're giving you a pass right there.
Right.
Right, because it's hard to recreate what we do in hip-hop with a band, but although I've seen it done, which is beautiful. But why do you need the vocal track? Oh my, on Saturday Night Live? Yeah. Really? I'm like, man, and people, you know, they clap, or maybe that was canned clapping. I don't know what it was, canned applause, but.
Saturday Not Live.
Yeah, exactly. You know, me personally, like, my voice is probably going to go out tonight, but watch, I will stop and tell the crowd, okay, voice is kind of messed up because I was practicing all the way down here in my car and I was yelling too much. But so what? If it goes out, you know I'm live. And if you practice, it comes out right. And if it's not, I learned that because I saw Marvin Gaye when I was a little kid in Seattle. And what he did, which was awesome, he played the Coliseum, which is, you know, that's his big money. And then literally the same night, he came to the hood in a little place that we had that held like 500 people. And he did another show because we couldn't afford it, right? And in the middle of his set, he had that song with that high. I can't remember it. Got to get it up. Yeah, that's what I was, something yeah. like that. You have to give it up, something like that.
Yep.
Anyway, he's doing his high pitch, and he couldn't get it, and he stopped. And the band's still playing. He said, look, I'm going to apologize in advance because my voice is out because I just did a show at the Coliseum, but let's do this. And everybody just stood up because something felt like, man, this guy has given it up right here on the stage. And that is what I grew up with, Parliament Funkadelic. I saw all that stuff when I was a kid.
How impactful for you to get to see those great. Yeah. Were your parents involved in that, getting you in front of?
My mom, you know, my mom was into blues. My dad was into blues and Southern jazz, you know, Eddie Harris, stuff like that. My brother was because, you know, he grew up with Hendrix and knew Hendrix and Bruce Lee and all those guys. So he listened to a lot of like psychedelic stuff. And me, I came up right on the edge of like James Brown, right? So when my brother kind of introduced me to James Brown, that's where I learned how to program drum machines before they even came out, because I used to sit there and try to copy Clyde Stubblefield and Cold Sweat. Anybody that's ever listened to that song, that is that, you know, it's like boom, scat, boom, scat, scat, boom, scat. Whereas at the time you had disco going boom, sh, boom, sh, or boom, 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 four on the floor. And Clyde Stubblefield is like staggering snares and
that syncopated.
Like, oh my goodness. And I just, and that's what got me really wanting to make music. Then I saw Kraftwerk on MTV and I'm like, they don't have a band. I can do this. I hadn't seen a drum machine yet. And then rap started. Cause I didn't know what I was going to do yet. I couldn't yeah. sing. Right. And that's when rap popped off and I first heard Scorpio and Planet Rock and those songs.
Yeah.
I would sit at home and at the time I had a little paper route. And I was too old for a paper route because I had a 69 Buick already, right? But I had a paper route, and I took that money and I bought a little drum machine called a Dr. Rhythm, and that was it. I would try to mimic songs. That's all I would do is copy songs. So,
thank you for being so generous with your time. Yeah. Tonight, Ridgely Theater, Sir Mix-a-Lot in Fort Worth, My Old Digs. I can't even get into the stories of some of the stuff I was doing at Ridgely Theater back in college. But tomorrow, Lava Cantina. Tickets, where are people getting tickets? Ridgely.com. Okay. And lavacantina.com. All right. Pretty simple. Cool. I wanted to ask you this one thing before we get out of here. And I know it's been phrased to you a million different ways. So I apologize if it's repetitive, but I'm fascinated. This is not a humble brag. Fitness is important to me. I'm in the gym 5 to 6 nights a week.
Now I'm there.
Yeah?
Yeah, I just started, man. I'm down like 18 pounds and I ain't stopping.
Congratulations.
Yeah, I ain't stopping, man.
And hitting the road, too.
Yeah, hitting the road and just, it's kind of weird. Now, you're going to laugh at me, dude. I was up to 318 pounds and I have, and I'm embarrassed to say this, I have a full gym. I'm talking about Nautilus machines, treadmills, everything, and it had dust on it. I said, what am I doing? You know what I mean? Because I have so many hobbies. I'm into electronics. I build RF amplifiers just for friends out of fun. Guys that used to do old radio, they like vintage amps, so I build
you
them.
Are a tech geek. I'm going to CES. I was like, okay, he's not lying.
No, and I'm a part owner of a little company. We're doing a little something for gamers, but I got to keep it quiet. But
all good.
It'll be out soon, but... Nah, man, I just made up my mind, man. Get this fat off of me, man. This is stupid. Because what the hell? I'm not lazy. I just wasn't doing nothing. But working on music and building amps, and get off my butt for a couple hours a day and do something. So I'm trying to catch you, man. I won't, but.
It feels good, though, right?
It does.
That's the number one.
Here's the first thing I noticed. This is going to sound kind of nasty, but you'll know what I'm talking about. I didn't know it. So when I started this about 2 months ago, got on the treadmill, just like, didn't really have it. Did it again. After 4 days, I started breathing different. I'm serious, man. I was like, what the hell? I thought I had a cold. I'm coughing stuff up and all this stuff. And I go to the doctor's like, no, there's nothing wrong with you. Your lungs are clearing up and getting stuff out of your system. And I feel like a different person. I mean, hell, I'm down here this early. You know I got to feel good. But anyway, you were making a point. Sorry.
No, barely a point. I'm at the gym and I see these beautiful women, all shapes and sizes. Mm. And I see, you know, you see the same people at the gym over and over again. I don't know that I've seen, there's the bodybuilder type girls. Right. There's fewer of them. Most everyday women I see at the gym now,
yep.
I've never seen them pick up a weight with their arms or do anything upper body.
It's all butt exercises.
It is all butt and legs.
I love it.
It's amazing. This is 2020. And
I love it.
It has never been more fashionable. Not even fashionable. It's like, it's ingrained
and
in
you
women
know,
these days.
I envy trainers because you always say, what's that one machine where you pull up, you lay down, face down, and you pull like up with your hamstrings.
Oh, it's
and
like butt. A leg curl.
Yeah, they do that, but they're laying down, and you always see the trainer grabbing right up under the butt
oh,
cheek
yeah.
like, oh, yeah, we'll hold on right here. Now, yeah. Come on, oh, raise it up. Oh, that's nice. Yes.
Like, real professional.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, why don't you let me fill in for you there, buddy? You need to go to the restroom, you know, but can't get that job. I'd probably get sued.
How fascinating is it to you that you were spitting about this thing however many years ago, and today yeah. It's as prevalent as it's ever been?
You know what the coolest thing about, this is going to sound weird, the coolest thing about this song now is that nobody actually understands what I was talking about when I did it, which means it worked, because what the song was actually about, that's why I dissed Cosmo and all that, because other than Claire Huxtable, women of color couldn't get, you know, primetime parts on television, right? So you had, you know, the streetwise prostitute on a Law and Order episode, stuff like that. But they couldn't get real parts unless they assimilated to another culture. And women, black women by nature, were curvy. Little in the middle, but they got much back. So I said, I'm going to do a song, not offensive, but poking at show business. And back then, women were like, yeah, I'm glad you said it. Now they're like, yeah, I love the butt song, which means it worked. It's normalized now. It's like, okay, cool.
You were doing deep state thinking.
Yeah,
you were getting people.
Exactly. I knew it the whole time.
You were changing society. All right, Sir Mix-a-Lot, thank you so much. Ridgely Theater tonight, Lava Cantina tomorrow. Appreciate your time.
See y'all tonight. Come on down and be safe. Bring that hand sanitizer.